outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, it's Tuesday morning again. Another podcast during the pandemic. A little extra one today. I've got a friend I want to introduce you to and talk about some goings-on back on the other side of the country. We're still doing all right out here in California, although it's gotten really hot, man. It says we're recording this, which is a few days before it'll air. It's 90 degrees here in Southern California, so hopefully we get back to our seasonal 70s. But really have enjoyed the conversations I've had with a lot of you, the after show, the people that have expressed their own journey in a lot of the things we've been talking about. It's been awesome. So appreciate y'all doing that. I'm Wayne Jacobson, by the way. This is The God Journey. And today I've got a special guest, a friend of mine for about the last 7 years, I guess we decided. Is that right? This is Harvey Mast from Millersburg, Ohio. And I'd want to introduce you to him. And we're going to talk about our friendship a bit and then about something really special going on back there right now during this pandemic. So we'll get to that too in just a minute. Harvey, how you doing?
Doing good. A little bit tired. But
this is late in your day, so you're kind of worn out.
It is.
You've been a little busy?
We have. We've been quite busy here lately.
And this is even before market season, right? You haven't even really opened the market yet officially as a business.
Yeah, it really isn't. We're never open this early, and it's really too cold to
be out in the market.
Yeah, I hate the cold.
Some days it'll be indoors, and then you'll just stay on year round or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I really like the open air feel to the market.
Anyway, you may have heard me tell this story before. I've told it. I was back in Kentucky a few years ago, getting ready to go to Kentucky, and I got an email from Harvey Mast. We'd exchanged a couple of emails, I think, prior to that. But you saw I was going to be nearby, and you said, "Hey, is there any chance you'd come up and visit some of us crazy people in Amish country, Northwest Ohio, which is not even Cleveland, or, I mean, you guys are way south of that, but you're kind of in the middle of nowhere. Beautiful country."
It is. Yeah. It really is.
So you asked maybe if I'd come. And so I said, "Hey, let's do it." And we met in Cincinnati and you hauled me up to Ohio. And man, at the time there was a number of you, I remember 30-ish or so folks that either cousins, relatives, friends of your guys's, and you had all spilled out of a pretty conservative Mennonite kind of deal, right?
Yeah, it was a real mixture of backgrounds. Amish was where my dad started out and spilled into Mennonite, and then exiting that into kind of his own thing, which was kind of where I came into the picture.
And then part of you were spilling out of this thing. You just got too legalistic for you, or just really felt like you're God desires you're being suffocated. What is it that kind of moved you guys outside that thing?
Well, for me, I was never really a part of any of that. I really rebelled against that as a young boy. It all seemed like a waste of time, and I wasn't really sure that God existed at all. Hmm. So I was kind of the rebel in the family. I didn't fit in very well growing up. There was only... I was one of the few that didn't get saved, quotation marks, growing up. And so that really put me at a disadvantage in my family. Wasn't really part of the in part of the group. Often spoke out.
The black sheep, as they say, huh?
The black sheep, yeah.
So then why did the rest of these folks spill out of that? If you weren't involved in that, I guess I got that story wrong. What? But there was a whole bunch of folks that were sitting there going, "We're not sure where we're going from here." And it was real conservative stuff. I remember long denim skirts and, you know, some really funky rules about dually pickups and all kinds of stuff.
So my parents kind of spilled out of that really conservative type group. But what happened is they sort of formed their own thing. Yeah. Which became a bit cult-like. My wife's family as well. I think the group of people that you met is largely my extended family.
Right.
And so we had sort of formed, or our parents had, sort of a conservative group of our own ideas, very loose, sort of attended different places that were very legalistic. And then had just kind of slowly wandered away from that and pulled away. My wife's parents, they were what they would call expelled from those groups and avoided marked. You're not allowed to eat at the same table as the rest of the family in that instance. So we would go. I grew up going to the family gatherings, and my mom and dad would be set off at a separate table from the rest of us. Made it really awkward at those family gatherings.
Lest they be defiled by your rebellion, is that the whole deal? Or was it the shaming thing to get you back in? Or
yeah, I think it's the, sort of that we're going to treat you badly enough, so being away from us is going to be worse than coming back to us.
Yeah, I've always found being away from religious people isn't as much of a punishment as they think it is.
It really isn't.
Well, what was it that made you want me to come back there? What was the connection that said, hey, come visit us? What was
Well, for me, it was I was looking out for my family. My mother-in-law had heard of the book The Shack, and she had really enjoyed it. And I think my sister-in-law had read it, and she had really enjoyed it. And they heard about this guy, Wayne Jacobson, knew that you had a podcast, and they were listening to it. And I had just been on a journey of my own in my early 30s of being really disillusioned with religion and God, or the image of God that I had. And I came to a point where I probably became as close to an atheist as I've ever been.
Okay.
I really needed to know whether this God guy was real or if we just made him up in our own image as a way to comfort ourselves. And I had some real brokenness in my life, some addictions, and I needed to know that he was a person that we could engage and not just a guy that died 10,000 years ago on a cross, or 2,000 years ago on a cross,
two.
I should say.
Long time.
It was only two. Like 10.
Probably to him too.
Probably so. And so I went on this journey to this God journey, really. To discover if he's real. And if he is real, is he kind? And do I want to be a part of what he's doing in the world? And if not, I can write him off. And I can find help somewhere, hopefully. But I can stop wasting my time on this obligation that religion had really throws at us. And from my background, I had thrown a lot of obligation into our lives.
Okay,
and so I had an encounter with him, and it turned my world upside down.
This was before I came out there, right?
It started about 2 years before you came out here.
Okay,
I had this moment where it was the last prayer I was going to pray to God if he existed, and it was very simple. I told him I wasn't going to help him out. I'm not going to take anybody's word for who you are. But if you exist, would you make yourself known to me? And I'm not giving you a timetable or what that's going to look like. I don't even know if you're good. Even if you're bad, I want to know who you are. But I just have this desire in my heart that I need this question answered, and nobody's going to be able to answer that except you, if you exist. So I don't suggest that anybody does this. But I wasn't going to help him out in any ways. I told him I wasn't going to pray to him anymore. I wasn't going to read the Bible anymore. I wasn't going to read any spiritual books anymore. Neither was I going to let anybody tell me who he was. Everything had become so toxic, and I was so disillusioned that I felt like if he was real, that he would be able to make himself known to me in some way that I could connect with him. Because the brokenness it was in my life was very real. And I've often, as a child, contemplated suicide because of a lot of that brokenness and addictions. And I couldn't find freedom from the shame and the constant burden that went on. This struggle that went on inside of me, and I was hoping he would be able to help, but if he couldn't, I was wanting to find help elsewhere.
And how did he answer that, Harvey?
He took me on a journey, and it wasn't I didn't wake up the next morning and And there was a bright flash of light. The clouds didn't peel back.
No burning bush.
No burning bush.
No falling stars.
Yeah. None of that really happened. But the first thing I noticed looking back that started happening is I began to enjoy life and the freedom from all the obligation. Now, it was incredibly lonely during that time. And rather than praying to him like I used to, I would just talk sort of to myself. And it felt dumb to talk to myself. So I imagined that there was a person with me that would hear me and care about me. When I was lonely, I would often talk to, I call them my imaginary friend.
But it wasn't imaginary, right? I mean, it may have felt like that from your end of it, but there was somebody real talking to you behind that, wasn't there?
Well, I found that out after a while. But I really began to enjoy life without all the obligation. I began to enjoy my wife, enjoy my kids, and I, in fact, began to enjoy them so much that I decided to change occupations. I was a contractor, built houses for a living. Uh-huh. In the process of things, I had this dream kind of come into my heart that I would like to sell produce here at the end of my driveway. So there was, looking back, there was a lot of things that led up to coming to know him. Hmm. A lot of it was in nature and just seeing how things grow naturally. And I began to wonder if maybe I had it all wrong and that coming to know God wasn't about this one moment, but maybe it was more of a journey to go on, that maybe over years we could begin to understand who he was. Hmm. And so it was a very gradual dawning. It was a very, for lack of better words, almost a romantic feeling about it, almost like a drawing, I would say.
Okay, cool.
There was a lot of curiosity. And then one day, my imaginary friend said something that was much wiser than I could come up with. And my heart just jumped. And I was like, God, is that you? Hmm. And of course, then there's no answer. And I'm a bit like a Mac in the shack. I'm like, boy, if that was you, God, you sure are timid that I can scare you away like that. And of course, silence. I couldn't hear nothing anymore. And so I went back to talking to my imaginary friend, and that voice just became, I became more comfortable with it. And looking back now, it wasn't him that was timid. It was me. Hmm. He wasn't wanting to scare me away. And so he was wooing me. He was drawing me out of my hiding places. And almost tantalizingly, but way slower than I wanted it to be. And then there was a moment of, there's many moments of just being touched by, through song lyrics and nature. The goodness in life was one thing that I began to see, and I kept wondering, why would he bless me with some of these good things? During that time, I had a daughter, which I always wished to have a little girl, a little baby girl, and Lara came along, and it seemed way too good to be true. And I was like, if God really hates me, why would he give me something so neat and so beautiful as a little precious girl like this? I remember one year, it was one of the first years, I planted a row of potatoes, and I planted 50 pounds of seed, and somehow that 50 pounds grew 2,000 pounds of potatoes. And it was far beyond anything I'd ever seen. I've never done that since or before. But I felt like God was showing me his goodness, if God existed. Wasn't really sure. But I ended up just kind of talking him throughout the day. And I didn't really press him. He didn't press me. But I really enjoyed our conversations. And I didn't dare tell anybody about it because they'd think I was crazy. I didn't really know for sure that it was him, but I'd like to think so. But
when did you become more settled that it was?
Good question.
Because I don't know this, Harvey. When I met you, you already had a sense of God making himself known to you, and you were comfortably in a journey with him, though lots to learn and whatever. But what made you finally go, okay, this is a God I can walk with and love? And what kind of pushed it over? Or did you even recognize when it did? Did it just sort of happen?
Both are true.
Okay. I don't like happened. People who say all the above. It's just not fair.
All the above. Well, I had one sleepless night. I was talking with him. And before I rolled over and went to sleep, I was railing at him. I didn't realize it, but I was angry with him. And I went to roll over and go to sleep. And like I always did, I said, is there anything you want to say yet before I go to sleep? And he says, in fact, I do have something I'd like to show you.
And, was this in your mind at the time, God or the imaginary friend?
Oh, at this time, I was certain it was God.
Okay, you're already, okay.
I don't know about certain.
But yeah, pretty sure.
I would say 65%.
Well, that's pretty accurate, but pretty precise anyway.
Go ahead. Yeah, 65%. He's like, in fact, I would. And then something brand new happened. I don't know what to call it other than sometimes I call it a hallucination. Sometimes I've called it a vision. But I didn't know for sure what it was. But I was in his presence in a way that I've never experienced before. And part of it was visually, but more of it was like emotionally, like I knew that he knew me to my deepest core, all the good, all the bad. He saw everything, but I felt this overwhelming sense of love for me that I couldn't explain. And so we had a conversation. I think it lasted a couple hours, and he helped me understand some of the places where I was angry with him, how that anger had been misplaced. I had thought that he had caused some of the pain in my past and in the lives of the people that I loved. I had a sister-in-law who lost her little girl, my niece at 19 months. She drowned in the neighbor's pond. And I just couldn't understand how a God of love would allow something like that. And so that was one thing I would rail on him. How could you do that? She's a great Christian. How could you allow that little girl? There's so many ways you could have prevented that.
When you talk about a two-hour conversation, you're talking about processing some things in your heart with him, right? Rather than he wasn't sitting. See, some people get the idea God's sitting across the room and I'm saying this, he's saying that, and they get a pretty artificial view of it. Was it like that for you? Was it more I'm processing inside with him and God's opening up things in my mind and heart and life?
Yeah, it was processing with him.
Okay.
It was, I didn't see a person.
Right.
It was an internal dialogue. I wasn't saying things out loud. I don't know that he was saying them out loud to me. Monica never heard anything. She was sleeping beside me.
But I think people are wanting something that really is more, there's something internal. God's revealing stuff at the same time I'm asking stuff. And over that 2 hours, things become clear, but it's not this artificial, I said this to God, God said that to me. I said, right? Because that's why I think conversation leads people astray a bit. They're kind of like, what? I never had one of those. And I'll say, I bet you have. I bet you've had those processing moments, but you just haven't put God in that conversation with you.
Yeah, that would explain it very well.
So how'd the journey go for you since? I mean, I want to get up to what's going on in your life today, but I've seen you, gosh, every couple of years over the last seven. I've been there three times to Ohio. You were once with me in Israel. And then you were out here in California. So we've crossed paths a number of times. I've watched God's life blossom in your heart. How would you describe how the journey's been for you in the leading up to the present?
It's been incredible.
And you've had a lot to work through. You've had some difficult growing up situations, family issues. You've had, without getting too specific about it, you've got a new business that you're trying to start there in Ohio and watch it expand. But I've watched God continue to draw you inside of what it means to know Him and to live loved and to love others around you. And you're learning to love well, which is always, to me, the earmark of what God's doing in life. Pretty cool.
It really is. Yeah, I'd say that describes my journey well. There's been a lot of transformation and healing from my childhood. I would say that was the thing that I've found the most healing from, would be a lot of the trauma in my childhood,
yeah,
being overcome by His love. Things with my dad that have been very difficult. Him working through that over time. I mean, this is years now down the road. So, but yeah, it's been incredible.
So you start out selling some fruit at the end of your lane. Your property borders on a pretty main road running through that part of Ohio. And it's expanded. You were telling me it just expanded over the years. And now you've got refrigerators and trucks and warehouses. And you got a major production out there.
Well, some people say that. I still think of it as a small market.
Okay. Well, it is a small market on the outside. But the infrastructure behind it is getting bigger and bigger. You also are growing your own crops now on some of that property that you sell, which is fascinating.
Yeah, a little bit.
And last year or the year before was kind of a tough year. You kind of found out you had some Lyme disease and it really took a toll on you physically.
I did. Yeah, it was year before last. Okay. Was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and this was a very difficult year physically for me.
Yeah, I want people to know this walk with God's a pretty real thing, right? It's not just all roses and puppy dogs and rainbows and everything just works out great. It takes you through some really significant challenges. And then you end the year last year at the market. You run what, about 6 months that you're open during the year?
Typically, yes.
You ended the year kind of on a tough note, yeah, last year?
We did. Yeah, we had two of our biggest customers on the wholesale side not pay their bills. And so everybody got paid. The market ran well. We ate. But at the end of the year, we ended up having to take out a loan to finish paying the rest of the bills. I never got paid last year.
You get to this fall, this spring, excuse me. Or, well, it's spring for me. It's still winter back there for you guys, I think. And you open the market early.
Because of the financial difficulties, I ended up starting a new branch of the market, and I called it Harvey's Mobile. Basically, what it is it's too cold to sell produce. I need money to pay the bills. And so I threw a bunch of produce in the back of my truck, and I went door to door peddling like back in the old days.
Yeah.
And it was very successful.
Good for you.
And at the end of that, I had some produce left over. Rather than selling it, I had about 7 boxes of just mix and match produce. I decided to give it away.
And you often have, like, after hours, you leave some food out at, I mean, you leave some of the produce out at night, even during the season, and you have kind of an honor system. People pay for it, pick up what they need. But now you're not even open. You just leave out 7 boxes or so of produce for people and say, you got a sign that says free, enjoy, or?
No, because it's closed, there's typically nobody knows there's anything out there. So I've got to let somebody know it's out there. So I go on the our Facebook market page, and I do a post, and I take a picture of the boxes, and I do a little rant on it because of – it was the day that COVID-19 hit the news. All the people were hoarding toilet paper and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And I'm packaging up this produce, and I have just this, we are responding exactly opposite from what you do in a situation like this. Your response is to give, and we're really missing out on that. So I thought, well, what can I give? Because I really think God is the really cool person. And what He does is always best. And I think He's inviting us into the things that He does, the way of living that He enjoys. But I told him, I said, you know that I'm broke. I've done this to pay my bills. Here's the profit in front of me. I'm going to go sell it to get the last bit of cash out that I've invested. Like, I have nothing to give. You've provided this job for me this winter, but what am I going to give? And then I look down and I see this produce and this little voice that is pesky at times says, well, you have this.
The imaginary friend again?
Yeah, yeah. That imaginary friend.
That voice.
That voice.
I hear you.
Well, you have this. And there was this tantalizing, intriguing cross in the roads that I saw of, I wonder what would happen if we went down that road instead of selling it. And I've seen just enough of him that I'm a very curious person. And I was like, it doesn't make sense financially, but I want to go down. I want to explore that path. Mm-hmm. And so I did. It was this kind of a fun idea and kind of a dangerous idea feeling, but it was, I had a lot of fun with it. And so I packaged these boxes up and did this little rant on Facebook, basically appealing to people's better side during this virus. And I called them coronavirus butt-kicking boxes and invited people to come. Whoever needs them, come and take them. And then I went off, did my thing. And then within 15 minutes or 20 minutes, I get a phone call from my neighbor. And he says, hey, where are those boxes? And I said, well, they're sitting right there at the market. Told him where it was. He said, I'm standing right here. There's none here. And there's people pulling in.
Oh, my gosh.
Looking for them. I said, well, they must be gone. So I quickly jumped on Facebook. Sure enough, the post had blown up. Quickly had to go in and edit the post and said, hey, guys, don't show up. There's no more boxes. But I challenge you to do the same thing. If you have something extra, if you have toilet paper, because that's what everybody was
hogging.
But whatever it is, go ahead and bring that out here, and we'll just have this community sharing space. Of course, anybody can come and leave anything they have in excess, and whoever needs it can come pick it up.
Yep.
And then I got home, and we were headed off. Me and Monica were off to Michigan, I think it was, on a trip. I was getting loaded up, and this guy pulls in, a friend of mine, and he's got three cases of elderberry syrup, and he's in tears. And he says, I'm not on Facebook, but my daughter, who lives in Texas, sent me your Facebook post, and it really touched me. And I want to give. And what I can give are these three boxes of elderberry syrup, which is supposed to be good for immune system. I don't know if all that is so or not, but some people believe it is. And thanked me for it. We put it on the shelves, and I took a picture of that, put it on the market page, and said, hey, come get it. This guy just donated it, and you know, be generous and only take one per household. We went on our trip. So we got back from Michigan. This is right before the shutdown, right during the shutdown, like the next day, everything in the state was going to be locked down. I look, and here there's a whole table full of odds and ends, from anywhere from canned soup to toilet paper, shampoo, all kinds of stuff. And somebody has made this little homemade sign that said, take what you need and leave the rest for somebody else. Oh, my goodness. It just really did something to my heart. I was like, this is really cool. The next day, there's two tables full. And a couple days later, it's empty. Next day, there's three tables full. And I, for some reason, go and I check my little after-hours cash box that we have during the summer. One of the kids thought they saw somebody putting money in there, and that wasn't supposed to be taking place. So I went and checked it. And there was $150 in there. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't keep this for myself. This is something that belongs to the community. So I decided I would buy fresh produce and put it back on the shelves. That's what I can do. And I have contacts that can do that. So I did that, thinking I got rid of the money. Within like 3 hours, all of the produce was gone, and there was $300 in the box. Hmm. And so from there, I reinvested that, and it turned into $500, then $800, then $1,000. and I just kept reinvesting it. Finally, I couldn't haul enough into my car anymore to bring produce in. So I had a local produce distributor begin to drop things off here for me, a couple skids. And then one afternoon, I realized that he wasn't able to haul enough for us anymore. And this is becoming a full-time job. It was really fun.
Yeah, I would think. My gosh, you've created this community space. People are sharing. But now you're having to get money, go spend it, you know. And you're not making anything, right? You're just giving it all away.
No, I'm just burning fuel. I'm burning fuels, all we're doing. But it was really fun. And just, but I realized that this is taking my time away from Monica and the kids and things that need to be done around here. And so we need to have a conversation about it. And are we going to stop this or are we going to embrace it? So we decided that we're going to embrace it. And we're going to open the market early, about a month early, just self-serve and by donation only. And we're invited not only the people who have need, but those that just want fresh produce to come as well. And it's a little bit safer environment than like Walmart because it's open air.
Right.
At least it was. Now there's so many people, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. But I think Monica told me it was $5,000 in the box the other day in one day.
There was. Actually, yesterday it was over 5,000. The one day there was over 7,000. I think that was our peak day. I have no idea what's out there today. But it really snowballed into, you know, from it being delivered to us hauling it in our trucks.
Yeah.
To now we were running every day, sometimes two trucks, and it was wearing us out. And then, so we had to make some changes and had the produce company, one of the biggest produce companies here in Ohio, is now delivering by the tractor trailer load twice a week. And then we're filling in with our trucks in between there. And none of this is going out wholesale. This is all, we're just dumping it on the shelf. And people are pretty much just grabbing it right off the pallets at times.
The little miracle of generosity begets generosity. As you gave, other people began to give, and needs are being met as well as people are giving into this incredible thing. Newspapers are coming out and TV stations to talk to you about it. It's an incredible story of generosity in that era of the world and during this pandemic when a lot of people are hoarding. Some people are giving, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's been incredible. And just, you know, there's a lot of neat stories that I get to hear of how lives are being touched. One of the neatest was the first thief that we prosecuted here, really broken person that was on drugs, came and tried to rip open the box. And the first day we opened officially, I looked up and she's across the table from me. I recognized her immediately. And I was like, they let you out, did they? And
what a warm greeting. How'd you get out?
Well, the last time I saw her, I chased her down in my box truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was trying to catch her for the police. And now she's come to buy or to get produce. And she has a clear look in her eyes. And she said, I was hoping you would be here. I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to apologize for what I did to you and your family. She was in tears. I was in tears.
Wow.
Just a real reconciliation moment.
It's really cool.
And it was the first time she put money in the box. All the other times she took.
She tried to take
it. Took produce. Yeah. And this time she actually donated. So that was a really neat moment for me.
So I think now you've got what you call your generosity curve to kind of go with the coronavirus curve, right? You've got this little graph.
I do.
About $68,000 have come in. 271,000 pounds of food have been distributed. 271. It's a neat contrast to the other curve we're looking at every night on the news.
You know, it really is. It's another fun thing that I wanted to do, sort of to offset all the negative news that's out there. We already have enough fear going around. And I wanted to kind of do the same thing, only of the good things that are taking place, especially here in our community. And it's just been amazing how the community has opened up and embraced this. There's many people who will come up to me and they'll tell me, you don't know how many times I've come here or read what's taking place, and I just cry. Hmm. And I said, well, it's not strange to me, because there's not a day that goes by that I don't cry. Hmm. For one reason or another. Yeah. I mean, it's really a bittersweet thing that's taking place for me, because there's so much in need, so many in need. Yeah. And yet there's such a beautiful thing taking place at the same time. And so sometimes it's tears of joy. Other times it's tears of compassion.
Yeah.
And there's just some really neat conversations that have been coming out of all of that.
And I'm sure will continue for years to come. People being touched by this are going to come back and talk to you in days to come. You and Monica, and your generosity has opened some amazing doors. What's the plan now? I mean, eventually you're going to open a market. You've got to make some money for your family's livelihood. do you see very far down the road?
I don't. It's really a day at a time. I have a rough idea. We do know that we're going to put prices up May 1st when the market officially opens.
Okay.
So instead of donation only, we're going to have to make a living,
right?
Somehow. And so we're going to put the prices back on the shelves, but the market is never going to be the same as it was before. There's going to be more changes that then we have time to talk about here. But one of them is that I'm really excited about is we're going to have our own food card, for lack of better words. We're going to have I can already tell there's going to be a profit made from this, surprisingly, beyond feeding everybody that needed during this time that we're off work. There is going to be a profit. So at May 1st, Harvey's Market will buy the produce from the community, from this generosity, and are going to make gift cards to the exact amount of whatever that total is, and we're going to give them away throughout the year, because I sort of believe that we're at the beginning of the financial crisis of this. I'm hoping that this will help us feed those who are in need throughout the rest of the year. And I have no idea how much that is. Maybe this curve is going to flatten out and I won't even have to worry about it. I would love that as well. But that's the best way that I've come up with, to where we can begin to pay our bills and also feed those who are in need in our community.
Yeah, because out of the money that's come in, you guys have been very careful to say every dime that's been given is going back into buying produce that's given away. So you've not, from this $68,000, you guys haven't gotten your mitts on any of it to help just pay the expense of driving trucks, of keeping the market open, of all that stuff, lights and power and livelihood for your family.
Yeah, we really haven't. It feels sacred to me, and it feels very wrong to do anything with it. So I'm keeping very good track of the income coming in, where it's going out. And that's how I'm able to do this chart.
Yeah.
And when it's all over, it's going to be really interesting to go over those figures and see what actually took place. Because I don't even know how to buy produce for this.
Right.
I just buy way too much and it's never enough.
And you've never had the thought of just continuing the generosity, but somehow you guys benefiting from some of that income as well? You're just thinking about going to prices again and sale prices, just going back to being somewhat of a regular market, though there'd still be room to give stuff away.
I'd be lying if I didn't think about that.
I was going to say, you must. And I don't know what the answer is, because once they go the way you're going to say, hey, this was for a season, and celebrate that and get back to business as usual. And that could be God's leading, and it could be God's leading to say, you know, this generosity thing, see where it goes a little further. But there's got to be a way that your family benefits from that in terms of covering your expenses and your business. It's got to be.
Yeah.
But I think people would give to that. I think people would willingly give to say, Yeah, I think the market's great. I think having it here and people can buy their stuff that goes in there. And I don't know. I don't know how it works out for you guys. That was my big question, was what's the end game here? Because, man.
And there really isn't.
Because, right, you had the space that was open, available, so we just give it all away. But now it's coming up on this is your season, and you've got to make a living. And
it is.
And that's always the challenge, right? Between generosity and being responsible for your family and where's God's leading. And there's no easy answers. You're just going to have to lean in and check in with you down the road and see how this thing sorts out.
Yeah, I'd love to talk with you about that more. I had some ideas of how that might play out. But then again, I don't know. I don't feel like it is either or. The other thing is, you know, Monica, she would really have to be on the same page as me.
Absolutely.
With this, the kids as well. And I remember last time we talked, I thought it was hilarious that the last time we talked, we were wondering how in the world that farmer out in Indiana, him and his wife got on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely.
About that.
Yeah, I saw a thing on Mike Rowe Facebook cast he does about a farmer in Indiana that grows produce and gives it away to the inner city. There's these markets in the inner city there. And I have no idea how that's being funded. I just think it's an amazing, amazing reality. Yeah. They work like 18-hour days to get food free to people. And you just don't hear about people doing that in the world. It's an amazing story. There's a faith component behind that, too. But I don't know what it is. But that's amazing.
I did find the answer to that, Wayne.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Jesus.
Well, I'm sure it's Jesus.
It is.
Wow. I love stories like this. Love my friendship with Harvey. Love that he was willing to go down this road and see what God would do and still trying to sort it out. I love that. Because God invites us into these generous stories and we have to resist the urge to control it. And we also have to resist the urge to make a program out of it, make it last longer than it's meant to. Hope it inspires you to find some generosity in your life during this season if you have extra, or to find some generosity if you're in need. And if you've got some extra this season and you want to help the generosity curve at Harvey's Market in Millersburg, Ohio, you'll find a link on the blog to do that.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.